We'll move on to the third case of this morning, Bradley against Barnhart. Goldblum. I hope you're not planning on reading all of that to Ms. Goldblum.
I certainly wouldn't inflict that on the court. Good morning. May it please the court, counsel, I'm Marcy Goldblum, representing the claimant in this case, Richard Bradley. This is a Social Security disability case. The claimant, Mr. Bradley, is a Vietnam War veteran. He had a long work history. The last job he was a self-employed dairy farmer. He stopped working when he had to sell his cattle. In fact, there's a report in the record that says, and this is dated December 6, 1999, he's alleging disability as of November 20th, 1999. It says, patient recently sold his cows because he can no longer handle physical requirements of running a farm. He reports feeling much worse, depressed, often teary and discouraged. Energy level decreased. Sleep decreased to 4 to 5 hours. He has thoughts of suicide. His plan would be carbon monoxide. When he applied for disability benefits in February of 2000, the first impairment that he reported was fibromyalgia. And in fact, when Social Security's doctor, who examined him at their behest, reported in June of 2000, fibromyalgia greater than osteoarthritis.
But I have actually two questions for you, Ms. Goldblum. One of them, maybe the less important one, is what difference does it make what the ALJ said at step two, as long as he found severe impairment at step two and moved on through the steps? And my other question is that this case really seems to turn on a question of judgment, namely, as of December 31st, 1999, was this man completely disabled such that he was eligible for benefits, or did it happen at some later point? And that really strikes me as the kind of thing on which people might disagree, and thus something we should defer to the ALJ.
Here's the thing, and this goes towards both of your questions. The government cites the Marziers case for the idea that it's okay for the judge not to have cited an impairment as a severe impairment at step two. And frankly, I wouldn't be so concerned if this administrative law judge hadn't named fibromyalgia at step two, but then later in his decision really addressed that impairment. But he doesn't. And what's so significant about this is essentially this is a gentleman who's saying, I can't work because of pain and fatigue. Those are the two big things. So credibility becomes a huge issue here. And you're right. He has a date last insured of December 31st, 1999, and the question is, did he become disabled at that on or before that point? Well, in order to make a valid determination, the administrative law judge has to make a valid credibility determination.
Well, and there's this tiny window. I mean, I guess it's clear he's working up until November the 20th?
With some help. I mean, the idea here is that he had this progressive illness. Mm-hmm. He had the fibromyalgia that was diagnosed back in 94. He has periods where it waxes and wanes, which is consistent with the disease. He had particularly flare-ups in 98, left him bedridden from time to time, and he had to hire the kid from next door, well, from the next farm over to help him out. He testifies that things were getting worse as he progressed into 99. His testimony at the hearing in terms of why he sold the cattle at that point. And his testimony at that point, when the judge and his attorney are asking him about the sale of the cattle, gets very, very emotional. Now, in his decision, the administrative law judge seems to kind of pass that off as, well, he got emotional because he had to sell his cattle, but he misses the main point. Why did he sell the cattle? Why did he sell it so the cattle was taken away on November 20th, 1999? Because, as he said to the doctors, because he could no longer physically handle the requirements.
But let me just say that I don't think the ALJ disagrees at the step four level that he could no longer perform the work that he had been doing. The question that we're grappling with is whether even if he had to sell the cattle, you know, and withdraw from dairy farming, whether there was anything he could do.
Sure.
You
actually, though,
know what a low threshold that is.
Actually, in a way, though, that's not quite true in the sense that at the time that he alleged disability, at the time of his date last insured, he was 53 years old. The judge found no transferable skills, high school education. Even if he could have done the full range of sedentary work, then the Social Security Administration's grid rule at 20114 would direct the finding that he's disabled. So, again, his testimony, his wife's testimony, the record in terms of during that window of time and shortly thereafter, it becomes crucial for the judge to make a valid and solid credibility finding. It's crucial for the judge to look at the impairments that are actually going on there. The judge, if you look through his decision, the only time he really looks at fatigue is when he's talking about there was a treadmill test. And he said, well, that was stopped because of fatigue. And then he goes on at a different point talking about that same test and says, well, he exercised till about 9 minutes. So obviously that shows that he can exercise to a very high level and it only precludes medium or heavy work. Mm-hmm. Well, again, the judge is missing the whole point of what this gentleman's impairments are. Fibromyalgia, and there's an element of chronic fatigue, it waxes and wanes, and in fact, the judge in this case, and I think it's very, very important, and as the court recognized in Golombowski, the administrative law judge can't ignore a line of evidence. And I think in this case, not only does he fail to really consider the fibromyalgia, but in a case of fibromyalgia where the pain and fatigue is so much a part and parcel of it, how can you possibly have a valid credibility determination that follows Social Security Ruling 96-7P, which this one does not, when you don't consider lines of evidence? Here's an example. At the administrative hearing, the ME who was at the hearing was asked on cross-examination about how flare-ups are related to fibromyalgia. Mm-hmm. He's asked, do you agree that the journal articles and the medical records reflect that fibromyalgia patients suffer flares? He says, yes, that seems to be the experience of the majority. And my next follow-up question is whether that's consistent with your experience treating fibromyalgia patients with depression. And he says, definitely. So they flare from time to time. Definitely, it worsens. And he goes on, and actually, he's asked, well, if you consider the flares as decompensation, would you agree that there's repeated episodes? He says, yes. Well, what's very important here is the ALJ finds against Mr. Bradley's credibility, specifically with regard to flares, but the ALJ...
I thought it was the intensity of the flares. I thought what the ALJ said was that Mr. Bradley's testimony at the hearing was reporting a more severe event, let's say, than what he had earlier reported to his doctors.
I don't think it's at all clear with the judge's credibility determination. I mean, if we look at the actual credibility determination, it's very, very sparse and actually seems to be exactly the kind of credibility determination that our courts in Zurowski and in Carradine and in Duranto say that the judges are not supposed to make.
You're running into your rebuttal time, but I'll just say over on page 9 or page, there are all these different page numbers, but anyway, in the ALJ's opinion, what he says, not a persuasive witness.
Right.
However, the frequent and extreme flare-ups of pain and depression that you described at the hearing are simply greater than are described in the contemporaneous clinic notes. Well, that's a reason. I mean, maybe it's not
but it's specifically not the type of reason that's acceptable, particularly where he doesn't discuss pain, he doesn't discuss medication, he doesn't discuss what kind of other things this gentleman may do to relieve pain, and he also distorts the activities, and I know I'm going into my rebuttal time, but let me just say very briefly, the ALJ says things like, for instance, he homeschools his child, but there's never any questions asked about how that's done. Is it a couple hours a day? He refers to building a greenhouse for his wife, but ignores the qualifiers that most of that time that the greenhouse was being built, he was sitting in a chair overseeing and supervising. That's not adequate for a credibility determination. Now I'll reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Sayin?
Please support, counsel. My name is Karen Sayin. I represent the Commissioner of Social Security in this case. In this case, Mr. Bradley had to establish that he was disabled on or before December 31st of 1999. He alleges that he became disabled on November 20th of 99, just 6 weeks before the expiration of his insured status. In addition to establishing disability by the expiration of his insured status, he also had to show that his disability lasted for 12 months. After looking at the evidence, the ALJ reasonably concluded that Mr. Bradley did not establish that he was disabled during that period of time. Rather, he concluded that Mr. Bradley retained the ability to perform a range of simple light work. There's an abundance of evidence to support his finding, including the objective medical evidence, which documents complaints of infrequent flare-ups during the probative time, Mr. Bradley's acknowledgement of considerable pain relief with medication, the opinions of state agency doctors, as well as Mr. Bradley's extensive activities, which included homeschooling his son and performing farming chores.
What about Ms. Goldblum's point about the homeschooling? If you can sit there and give the kid a math lesson and then take a nap for 35 minutes while he works on it and then do something else, that's quite different from the kind of demands you would have in a real workplace.
That's true, Your Honor. It's interesting to note, however, that Mr. Bradley never has qualified his performance of the homeschooling activities until in the reply brief for the oral argument. After the ALJ relied on this factor in his decision, Mr. Bradley simply didn't respond to it. He submitted a brief to the Appeals Council, also in his district court brief. He didn't even acknowledge that that was a factor that the ALJ considered, let alone offer any kind of qualifiers like this court has suggested.
So you think he needed to testify, here's what I was really doing day to day, I would spend 20 minutes doing this and take a break, et cetera?
Perhaps. And again, in the initial appellate brief, the only statement regarding that homeschooling factor that Mr. Bradley made was that to criticize the ALJ for not questioning him about it at the administrative hearing. Yet he had an attorney at the hearing, an attorney who was very well familiar with the transcript of this case and directed his client towards very specific pages in the record that he felt didn't help his cause. Yet there was no mention at all of the homeschooling. And this wasn't just an isolated mentioning in the transcript. No less than six times was this mentioned. In August, September, and November of 99, and in January, February, and May of 2000, a period that coincides with a typical school year from August of 99 through May of 2000. So the question becomes, given that evidence, was it reasonable for the ALJ to assume that Mr. Bradley was performing those activities?
What do you do about the problem with diseases like fibromyalgia that wax and wane in their severity? One of the things, as I recall, the vocational expert said is if he would have to miss 4 days a month of work, there were no jobs that could tolerate that. And isn't that the picture that we get from this fibromyalgia?
Well, as Mr. Bradley stated in his reply brief, his fibromyalgia waxes and wanes not only over the period of months, but even over the period of years. And the focus here is on this very limited period of time from his alleged onset date of November of 99 through the expiration of his insured status. And again, he had to establish his disability for 12 months. It's important then to look at that probative evidence. And while you've questioned as to whether or not this was a situation where Mr. Bradley was experiencing these waxing and waning episodes of his fibromyalgia, there's really not a whole lot of medical evidence from this period, and his complaints mainly focus on his right shoulder problem as well as his complaints of depression. Yet once he sought treatment for his depression, antidepressant medication was prescribed for him. Shortly thereafter, he acknowledged significant improvement.
Yeah, it is a little creepy that the administrative law judge refers to his suicidal ideation as understandable.
Well, Your Honor, I think
kind
he was
bothersome.
He was noting from the medical evidence that when Mr. Bradley was describing his depression, that he felt the basis, the reason he experienced an aggravation of it was because he had to sell his cattle, and the ALJ was simply sympathizing with them and noting that that was what happened in this particular situation. But once he was prescribed an antidepressant medication, he almost immediately expressed significant improvement. And in fact, in January of 2000, when he was referred to a mental health assessment, he acknowledged again that improvement, and he requested no further follow-up care, and the mental health specialist didn't try and dissuade him from that. And again, when he saw his doctor the following month in February 2000, he again acknowledged improved mood, no difficulty sleeping, and that type of activity. Likewise, when he saw a doctor again in May of 2000, he reported improved mood, appetite, and sleep. So the ALJ noted this was a very isolated situation regarding his depression. He was treated with an antidepressant medication, and during this probative period, he didn't have any more exacerbations of it. That's what the administrative law judge was referring to. Again, I think in this case, as we've discussed, it's a very limited period, and it's important to focus on that medical evidence from that period. Shortly before Mr. Bradley's alleged onset date, he acknowledged that he was having significant pain relief with his medication. He did complain of an exacerbation of his depression in November of 99, but as I've discussed, he acknowledged significant improvement by January and February of 2000. And after that February of 2000 visit, with the exception of the evidence related to his right shoulder surgery, we only have one more doctor's visit the rest of that calendar year 2000. That happened in May of 2000, and Mr. Bradley didn't seek treatment because of depression or fibromyalgia or fatigue. He sought treatment because of gastrointestinal problems.
But of course, if he'd fallen in, I guess the question is, before December 31st, 1999, had he fallen into a pattern with the fibromyalgia and chronic fatigue syndrome where he was utterly unable to work four more days a month? Because that's the breaking point, it seems, that the VE has defined. So it doesn't mean you're feeling terrible every day. Maybe he was just being tough.
Well, regarding that, Your Honor, and the statements here at oral argument earlier from Mr. Bradley were that he had to get help from a neighbor significantly before the period at issue here. But on page 58 of the transcript, Mr. Bradley also stated that as a dairy farmer, he was working 16 hours a day, 7 days a week. He was performing significant activities, and the ALJ agreed that he couldn't perform those strenuous types of activities, and he instead reduced him to a range of light work to accommodate his fibromyalgia in this particular case. Mm-hmm. Also, regarding his period right before his alleged onset date, in June of 1999, which is a few months before his alleged onset date, he was seeking treatment at the rheumatology clinic. His care was transferred away from that clinic because he was mainly just complaining of problems with his right shoulder, and the rheumatologist noted he had nothing further to offer him. At follow-up visits at the general VA clinic in August and September of 99, again right before his alleged onset date, in August he had no specific concerns and just wanted his medications renewed, and in September he again acknowledged significant improvement with his medications. So given that evidence, probative to the relevant period here, it simply didn't establish that Mr. Bradley was experiencing disability at the time that we're questioning here. After considering this probative evidence, the administrative law judge reasonably concluded that Mr. Bradley had not demonstrated that he was experiencing these frequent flare-ups and bedridden situations that he was alleging at the administrative hearing. Regarding the Step 2 finding as well, Mr. Bradley did not make a specific finding as to the fibromyalgia. However, it's clear from the body of his decision he considered all of the probative symptoms in discussing and analyzing Mr. Bradley's impairments here. He talked about his chronic pain. He noted where Mr. Bradley was complaining of pain, mainly his shoulders, his back, his knees, and his feet. He discussed the fatigue. Fatigue, mind you, wasn't really a very significant symptom during this period in question here. The ALJ also noted that one of the symptoms with Mr. Bradley's depression was decreased energy. He considered all of the probative symptoms related to Mr. Bradley's fibromyalgia. He also considered that medical evidence and translated that into a residual functional capacity finding for a range of simple routine light work. Based on this evidence, the administrative law judge's decision was reasonable. He concluded that Mr. Bradley had not established disability by the relevant time period. And if there are no other questions, I'd ask this court to affirm the decision.
All right, thank you. We will give you a full minute in which you can offer any further thoughts.
Thank you, Your Honor. To begin with, counsel for the government raised the question of why Mr. Bradley hadn't addressed before this at this point why the explanation for what he was doing homeschooling. Here's the thing. These are non-adversarial hearings. His experienced attorney obviously felt that the references throughout the record to homeschooling were really not that significant because if he's doing it a couple of hours a day, it's really not anything that diminishes from a finding that of his credibility. There was no reason to bring it up. And in fact, again, in this non-adversarial situation, if the administrative law judge felt that it was significant enough to detract from this gentleman's credibility, then he had an obligation to at least ask, what did you do when you were homeschooling? In addition, the fact that the rheumatology clinic told this gentleman that there was nothing further they could offer speaks, I think, to the fact that his impairments were chronic, they were ongoing, not that they weren't severe, not that they weren't disabling.
Okay, if you want to wrap up.
Okay. In general, the administrative law judge came out with what he felt was an RFC statement, but he doesn't really explain how he came to that. He doesn't explain how he found that this gentleman was able to stand and walk for up to 6 hours out of an eight-hour day. That isn't consistent with the evidence of record or the clinical records.
Okay. Thank you very much, Ms. Goldblum.
Thank you very much.
We will take the case under advisement.